immersive audio podcast. In conversations with industry thought leaders, practitioners, artists, academics, and entrepreneurs, discussing all aspects of this rapidly evolving industry, from art, science, and business to practical insights and project case studies. We aim to inform, educate, explore, and unite the community.
Hello and welcome to the Immersive Audio Podcast, episode 100. Now that the dust from the big trip has settled down and we're all back home, I must say we really enjoyed the conference. And thank you to all of our listeners who voted for us and joined our panel on the day. As promised, here is the recording of the panel. I hope you enjoy as much as we did. Until next time. Hello and welcome to our panel on immersive audio, past, present and future. Before we get started, with that in mind, I just wanted to ask our audience today, how many of you have experienced spatial audio in any shape or form? Pretty much everyone. Thank you. I also should say, by the way, welcome to the Immersive Audio Podcast episode 100. It's our anniversary and we are absolutely delighted to be here today presenting this panel, and thank you for coming and joining us. Just a few words about myself. My name is Oliver Cadell, and I'm a host of Immersive Audio Podcast, which we launched back in 2018, so over 6 years. As a daytime job, I represent 16minute Digital, and I craft spatial interactive audio for immersive media. This is my podcast co-host, Monica, and our lovely guest, Natalia and Marcos. Monica, over to you.
Thanks, Oliver, for kicking this off. As Oliver mentioned, my name is Monica Bowles. I am a digital artist, audio engineer, and composer. I have been working with spatial audio since 2011 with a focus on creating immersive live performances utilizing 360-degree projection and large-scale immersive audio arrays. I joined as co-host for the Immersive Audio Podcast back in 2021, and I'm super passionate about exploring all the potentials of spatial audio. On that note, we have a really exciting panel today. With our panelists, we will be highlighting some of the key developments that have defined immersive audio in the past decade and reflect on current trends while looking towards the future. In an era where audio experiences are becoming increasingly integral to entertainment, gaming, virtual reality, and beyond, understanding the latest innovations and market dynamics is crucial. With that, I would like to hand the mic over to Natalia and Marcos so they can introduce themselves and talk a little bit more about their roles in the industry. Natalia?
Thank you so much. Thank you both for having me. It's a pleasure to be here and lovely to meet you. So very quickly, my name is Natalia Stepańczyk. I'm a segment manager for immersive and experiential applications at Holoplot. Holoplot is the company behind the Sphere in Las Vegas. Some of you may have heard of it. It's indeed the largest sound system in the world. I'll go into a little bit more detail in a second. We've also introduced the world's first matrix array. And again, I'll go into detail more in a second. I think most importantly, it's all about controlling sound and controlling how sound behaves in spaces, but also basically wherever you are. And without that level of control that we've introduced, a project like Sphere wouldn't be possible. So we're really solving a lot of challenges, such as working in a difficult acoustic environment, for example, or challenges such as a noise spillover to your adjacent listening areas. That's just as an example. In the Sphere, another interesting challenge was positioning all the loudspeakers behind the LED screen. So when you're there, you're really immersed in the content, visual content, and not necessarily having to look at loudspeakers. Unfortunately, people don't like to see them. I don't agree with that, but there we go. I think, yeah, let me just show you also this one. This is actually a shot from the audience perspective, and obviously what you can see is that you cannot see the speakers, right? And really, it's just another level of immersion here. So we have this this huge step away from the sweet spot, so the listening sweet spot that you may have heard of. What we're doing is expanding that into a sweet zone. So we're really trying to include as many people as possible, expanding that listening area into a larger audience. And it's kind of something that we're a little bit known for. Our mission statement is make every seat the best seat, right? So make sure that there's no bad seats in the house, which is very important. I've been with the company for 5+ years, looking at the development of projects like Sphere, also the development of the product and the system itself. It's been quite a journey, very interesting. And I think without exaggeration, I can say that this is really, for me, in my life, the most interesting, exciting thing that happened in audio tech. Very, very nice to be here, and thanks so much. Over to you, Marcus.
Thank you, Natalia, and thank you, Oliver and Monica. It's a pleasure to be here. And my name is Marcos Simon. I am the CTO and co-founder of AudioCynic. I don't know how many of you are familiar with AudioCynic. We are a company that is born with the desire of bringing spatial audio into everybody's houses. Spatial audio is something that exists since many years ago, okay? Since like the 80s, 90s, we can go to the cinema. We can experience a movie that has some kind of surround, some kind of immersive audio. But what happens when we want to consume spatial audio at home? It's very difficult because basically we need to put speakers all around us. Not everybody can do that, okay? And then a few years ago, in around 2015, we were in a research project in the UK that was called S3A. This project was about bringing spatial audio inside people's houses. And this is when we started developing the ideas of what AudioCynic is. So Natalia was talking about controlling sound. AudioCynic technology works by controlling sound. And what you can see there is like some kind of soundbar that has like a little dot in the center. This little dot is a camera that is used for doing ear position tracking, okay? AudioCynic technology uses an array of speakers, similar to how Holoplot is doing to direct sound in space. What we do is that we use an array of speakers to create two beams of sound, okay? These two beams of sound are going to deliver a set of binaural signals from mid-air to the ears of a user, okay? So if I can ask to the audience, do you know what binaural audio is here? Okay, well, so basically, normally to consume binaural audio, you need headphones. Our technology, AudioCynic technology, renders binaural audio without headphones. So it's something very practical, okay? Because just sitting in front of one of our systems, you can have a very, very realistic sound experience, okay? When we're talking about binaural, one of the great things that you can do is that you can perceive distance. You can hear an object that is very close to you, or you can perceive an object that is very, very far away, okay? This is great because this opens a new dimension of how we consume spatial audio, okay? And what we have done in AudioCynic is basically, is really apply our technology to a subset of what is spatial computing. And it's all those applications where we are basically listening to speakers in front of us. Like can be a laptop, can be a monitor, can be a soundbar. There in the soundbar, this is our first product, which is the Razer Leviathan B2 Pro soundbar that we developed with Razer and THX Spatial Audio. And basically the soundbar, if you have the chance to listen to it, the experience is amazing because you see the soundbar in front of you and you are super surrounded by sound. Sound is all around you. We are also applying our technology to monitors. This year we developed a monitor with Acer, which is also a monitor that has 3D naked eye visuals, okay? And also, basically, we are now looking to put our technology in laptops. And this is very important because laptop, monitors, these are tools that we use in our everyday work. And thanks to our technology, we have the capabilities of making these devices able to radiate very immersive sound. Okay, so basically, this opens a new way for everybody to consume audio in a practical way, thanks to the technology. Just to show also why any audio, any content is going to benefit with this technology because just with normal devices, we can render any content from music, game audio, streaming, to have Dolby Atmos just in a practical way, even telecommunications or something that people don't mention anymore, which is the metaverse. But the metaverse is really how to communicate with humans virtually in a more natural way. And I think that's a fair introduction. No, thank you.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Natalia and Marcos, for going through and talking about what you do. It's very, very interesting. And so we're going to kind of dive into some questions here. Natalia, can you describe the evolution over the past decade in the sound reinforcement and PA industries?
Yes, gladly. I have a little visual aid here for those in the room. I'll try to describe it also for those who can't see this. I think we need to take a little bit of a step back, not just over the last decade. I would like to maybe take us back to the kind of origins of sound reproduction reinforcement to the point source, right? So a point source, imagine actually if there was a point source here right now directing sound towards you. In order for those of you at the very back, we would have to play it rather loud here. Therefore, the ones at the front would probably be in a very hot, kind of hotspot position, right? So it kind of radiates energy in a little bit, let's say, uncontrolled way. It almost called for a development of something a bit better, something that allows us to have a bit of control. So that's how a few decades ago already the line array was introduced. So I'm going to oversimplify it a little bit, but think of it as stacking a few point sources vertically, one on top of the other. And as you can see, and I'll describe it again for those who can't see, the level now is a lot better. The distribution from the front to back is a lot more uniform. However, what a line array doesn't allow us to do is that it doesn't give us any control in the horizontal plane. And that becomes important. Think about, again, for example, a venue like the Sphere or any difficult acoustic environment where it's important to control not only the coverage, but also how your system interacts with the room itself. So again, we have point source, line array, and almost a logical next step would be to introduce a matrix array. That's how we arrived at where we are with Holoplot. And here you can see that the audience is covered very evenly from front to back. And again, we are able to minimize the energy that is spilled over into the rest of the room. So this is our matrix array. So instead of now that simplification I mentioned, it's no longer just point sources vertically and point sources horizontally. There's actually a lot of these point sources. So here is an example of a 3x3 array and 9 boxes. And each box is not just one single loudspeaker, one single driver. There's almost 100 of them within each of these boxes. And now that is almost like pixels in an LED screen. The more of them together, the sharper the image, the more control you have, the more you can do with it, right? So let me see what I've got here. Just a little example of what we can do with it and how we play with this, right? So we have a way to cover the entire area by one beam, for example, where there'll be a background music playing in, and everyone will be evenly hearing the same level, the same signal. Then the same array can actually generate multiple beams. So there will be other beams which, for example, if I was to split this audience in front of me into three, maybe my voice would be projected in English to the people sitting all the way to the left. People in the middle would be hearing the simultaneous live translation into Spanish. And let's say people on the right had enough of my voice and want to hear, sounds of rainforest or something like that. So you can completely create these three different zones on top of that first coverage zone. And so when I go back to the comparison of light, so we had light bulb. Now we're talking really more about sort of something like a theater spotlight. I'm illuminating individual areas or individual people with sound. And now if I want to go one step further, if you think of a laser pointer, right, we actually have that level of control and we can pinpoint an individual person within an audience and send something completely else to them. Or, which is very fun when talking about immersive audio actually, is sending these very sharp beams at reflective surfaces. So you can send it to the side walls, you can reflect off the ceiling, anything that's hard reflective, you can reflect sound off and the sound will appear to you as if it's coming from that point of reflection. So now here this example is an array, loudspeaker array in one place of the room, but actually the experience can be of sound coming from all around you without necessarily needing speakers there. So yeah, that's the kind of a quick gist of where right now we are, where we came from the point source line array to the level of control we have right now.
Thank you, Natalia. Yeah.
Thank you, Natalia. back to you, Marcos. So our next question is, can you describe the current ecosystem of platforms and applications that have strong use cases for spatial computing audio?
Spatial computing and then spatial computing audio is a term that has been circulating around the industry for basically a bit of time. And I would say that we can simplify a lot what is spatial computing and is anything that is beyond 2D, okay? So in the case of spatial computing audio, where do we have that need? We are at a time where we are lucky because basically spatial audio is every time becoming more mainstream, you know? With technologies, for example, like Apple that introduced the AirPod that has taken Dolby Atmos to the masses in a way. Going back to Apple, for example, they just announced what they call the first spatial audio computer, the Vision Pro, okay? There are many more applications where spatial audio is so important for every one of us, you know? Like if I could go back to a couple of slides. So for example, this is like if you think on the normal content that we consume as users in one of our everyday interactions with our laptop, we listen to music, we do lots of calls in our everyday, we watch movies through Netflix sometimes, and other people we like to game. Any of these applications benefits from spatial audio. And once we are beyond 2D, it's spatial computing, you know? It's, for example, I want to have a call using Teams, and I really want to feel where you are, basically. And thanks to spatial audio, we can make this possible. If I'm playing a game, basically, I really, for example, a first-person shooter, I really want to know where they are shooting to me because basically that's going to give me a competitive advantage, okay? And these are things that are possible, you know? If we go to just the next slide, please, Oliver. For example, this is an example of what somebody can consume at home based on our technology with spatial audio. And you can just have a device that is very compact that's in front of you that is going to give you now the ability to listen all around you. You know, for example, he's looking at a screen on this example. This screen can be 3D, okay? This is what basically spatial computing allows you to communicate and to interact with our everyday world in a way that is more simple, in a way that is more realistic with how we do things in basically real life, okay? In real life, we have 2 ears, we are able to listen to spatial sound, but when we go back home, this spatial sound, most of the times doesn't exist because we don't have the right tools, you know? But if we can give the right tools and the right equipment to people to really consume audio in a practical way, we are all of us as consumers going to want to listen to spatial audio. And I suppose it's like once you try it, there's no way to go back. Basically, we were discussing yesterday about really what makes you feel as a consumer when you listen to spatial audio. It really makes you feel connected with the place where you are. That can be, for example, you are watching a movie or you are in the middle of a video game, or this is what you are. Thanks to spatial audio and thanks to give this in an easy manner for consumers, we can make it very appealing.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Monica, now to you. Can you give us an overview of how technology is available to artists such as yourself and content creators for working in immersive audio production have advanced in the past decade?
Yes, of course. So I got into working with spatial audio back in 2011 when I got access to my local planetarium. They had a 15.1 surround system. And so back in 2011, like Pro Tools doesn't output to a 15.1 surround system. Like, you know, there's no panner for that. And so how do you actually engage with that? So I got my start actually building patches, and I'm not sure if anyone here is familiar with Max MSP, but it's a graphical programming environment. You use little objects and you know, connect them together. And there were some great, you know, institutions kind of back in the day, like EarCam, did a lot of work to be able to kind of develop some little objects that you could use. Also, ICST, I used their Ambisonics objects a lot as well, but started just building a lot of my own tool sets within that space because the tools didn't exist. Now, what's been super exciting kind of over the past, you know, about like 6-7 years is to really just watch the advancement of tools and the availability of these tools for artists and for content creators and for people who are kind of interested in working in these spaces. So, you know, I mean, we've talked a lot about, you know, just the speaker development, which, you know, there's some really amazing, like, things going on in that space and just kind of revolutionizing, you know, the kind of the way that we think about speakers in general. But also, you know, on that kind of algorithmic side, you know, I'm sure, you know, everyone's heard of Dolby Atmos. However, you know, before Dolby Atmos, there's really just a bunch of different algorithms and a bunch of different approaches for how you deal with this. So some of, you know, my, again, like Oliver and I, you know, I guess I joined the podcast in 2021. Oliver, you know, started this in 2018. You know, we've really been tracking a lot of these, you know, and have a lot of conversations with a lot of these technologists and people who are kind of developing these tools. So if you do want to learn more about that space, I, you know, of course, recommend, you know, listening to our podcast. But you know, some of my favorite tools that I've been able to, you know, kind of just watch come out. I really like Spat Revolution, you know, because they're kind of based on the Spat tools that were developed out at EarCam. And you're able to use multiple different algorithms. So you can combine algorithms together, which I find, you know, each algorithm has its own tone, its own sound. So it's kind of like, I look at it as using, you know, a certain EQ or choosing, you know, an EQ that you're going to kind of put on, kind of use to kind of create and shape your tone for the space that you're working in. So that's, you know, one of my favorite platforms, I think, for just kind of developing for more live, you know, places. They also have plugins for Ableton and stuff like that. That is a paid software. There's a lot of free stuff too. Reaper is actually an amazing, you know, software for just being able to be really creative with your routing. And it's not a very expensive DAW. And I think, like, just getting into it, you know, you can get Reaper. There's the IEM plugins that were developed, that are Ambisonics plugins. You can download those for free. So even if you're just wanting to start playing around with this stuff with your headphones and just kind of like getting involved, there's a lot of really great like free stuff kind of available. And then, you know, you can go up and up in sort of the things that are available. But it's been really amazing to just watch the tools and kind of technologies develop over the past, you know, few years and really giving access to, like making this space more accessible to artists and people who don't want to sit there and learn how to use Maximus P and program all of their own stuff. So, yeah. All right. Well, I'm gonna turn this back at Oliver now. So, Oliver, what are the pivotal advancements that you have seen over the past decade in immersive audio as it relates to the extended reality and VR space?
There's so much to say, so much to mention, so much to unpack, but I'm just going to caveat that I probably won't mention everything, but I'll do my best. So, kind of speaking from the perspective of my own personal journey, I joined the XR industry about 10 years ago, back in 2014, around the time when Parmalaki Oculus sold the company to Meta, formerly known as Facebook. And things really kicked off from there. DK1 was released, followed by DK2, a head-mounted display for developers and Rift and so on. The companies from likes of Samsung, Google, HTC also were making all kinds of wonderful headsets. Some of you probably remember the ones where you had to insert your mobile device in order to watch 360 videos and access the apps. And as a result, that was really a pivotal moment for spatial audio in that particular sector of the industry, because we had the golden era of 360 video production. Stereo mixing, sound design paradigms didn't make sense because 360 video required 360 audio. And just to give you a quick, simple example, when you are in a 3D degrees of freedom experience, looking in all kinds of directions, objects, events, you expect sounds, sources of sounds originate from relevant locations. And as you move around, look around, it needs to be panned dynamically. And if you use stereo sound, it simply wouldn't work. So very quickly, Ambisonics technology became kind of a bit of an industry standard amongst the creators in terms of content acquisition, as in location recording, for example, tools that allow you to do spatial audio authoring in DAWs, as well as mainly, I think, also the big platforms that allow to publish and view that kind of content, for example, YouTube and Facebook and so on. Ambisonics is a very efficient and flexible format. Without going into too much detail, it's a sound field that essentially attached to your head and rotates according to your head movement, your field of view, just like 360 film would do. So it was a perfect match. And at the same time, we also had technology that allowed us to decode ambisonics binaurally real time, which is really important. So back then, so going back a decade ago, I think we had tools like Blue Ripple and Two Big Ears, which was subsequently also acquired by Meta and then made available free of charge for the community. That really pushed and democratized the access to the professional tools, which I think had a positive impact. Yeah, that's majority of people start using those tools for linear post-production for spatial audio, but we shouldn't really forget about interactive audio. Obviously, at the same time, gaming and other experiences would be produced in game engines such as Unreal and Unity, and for that, you would also be using SDK sound development kits as well. So kind of fast forward a little bit, we have a really good portfolio of tools available for content production. I'm specifically kind of referring to, again, 3 degrees of freedom, ambisonic binaural rendering, you know, like Reaper, Pro Tools, that kind of stuff. We have Noisemakers, Dolby, Audio Ease, DVR, just to name a few. There's many more, and we also see different types of spatial codecs such as MPEG-H, and also newly released immersive audio model and formats. A bit of a mouthful, but worth remembering, because one of the most recent advancements in the industry that allows you to combine the best of all worlds and really pack the types of audio formats that you want for your production. I should also mention the advent of personalized head-related transfer function research and all kinds of technologies proliferating the industry, which not only allow the content creators to improve their workflow and authenticity whilst working with spatial audio, but also for the consumer, because just we'll bring one example. You can scan your ears with iPhone, and that algorithm is then being utilized whilst you're playing music on Apple Music platform with Dolby Atmos format. It's just one of the many examples. Yeah, and just to kind of summarize it, I think we've seen a lot of development, and there's been a lot of exciting innovation in the industry, and this feel like we're being spoiled in terms of the choice. But you know, with Apple entering the ecosystem with the recent release of Vision Pro, I think the most exciting innovation is still ahead of us.
All right. Thank you, Oliver. So we're going to move into just having a couple panel questions, and then we'll leave a little time at the end for some Q&A. So anyone who has questions, get those ready. All right. So for anyone who would like to answer it, how do you see immersive audio continuing to evolve and grow, and what impact will it have?
Yeah, I can start, just question for sure. I'm probably a bit biased, and don't call me a control freak, but I really think it's about the control we have over sound, because it's been improving a lot, and we keep that growth there, and we can see how that kind of keeps getting better and better. That control comes from, I think it's fair to say, software. And it's something that, you know, I mentioned before, kind of liberating the sound a little bit from the constraints of the space, acoustic space. So we are working in difficult acoustic environments. We can work with, you know, positioning of a loudspeaker, which is somewhere else than where you need your sound to be. So kind of liberating the sound from its origin, let's say. So it's kind of, I guess it kind of, for me, it goes towards the word freedom, right? Because you have that freedom to play with sound in a very new way. What you, Marcos, mentioned earlier about bringing sound closer to people and bringing it further away, that's something that both our companies are working on that you couldn't do before. I love giving an example of a mosquito because it's a fun one. So if I had a mosquito flying around me, it would give me a physical reaction, but you wouldn't have any idea of what's going on, right? You wouldn't hear it at all. Reproducing something like that in a real environment with a loudspeaker was never possible, but now it actually is possible, right? So we can give an individual person an experience. that others won't be aware of. So that's a really, really cool kind of thing. And again, the freedom from headphones, I think that's an important one. Headphones are great, and don't get me wrong, but when we're trying to have a joint experience with other people, being able to get rid of the headphones and have it naturally, I think that's just a really wonderful place, and that's where we're getting to. So essentially, we're getting to closer and closer to being able to reproduce, now big statement, nature, right? We are able to, we're starting to be able to reproduce what the experience is like in the real world. So for me, that's the one.
How do I see immersive audio continue to evolve? So one of the things that I would like is like thanks to the, like you say, control, and thanks to having technology that are really to achieving audio reproduction in a very specific way, we can make spatial audio have more quality, and we can have spatial audio arrive to everyone. Okay, this is one of the things. Like I think spatial audio, once you listen to something which is very realistic and is very good, you say, wow, I really like it. However, if you listen to something that is mediocre, people say, what is this? This is not good. This is not good enough. And I think if we are able to develop the tools and the techniques to give people basically realistic spatial audio in a way that they can consume it, you know, people are going to embrace it. If it is practical and it is good, we are going to say, why not? You know, I really prefer it, you know. And the way I think I see immersive audio is like people having access to more content that is being created and access to tools and to devices with whom they want to reproduce it, you know. We were doing some demos, you know, Eugenic, like a couple of weeks ago, and somebody told us, oh, this is the first time, basically, this is the first time I know what spatial audio is, you know. If you're able to give people like good experiences, they are going to embrace them. And I would like to see spatial audio evolving with everybody using it for their everyday experiences. There was, I think, George Lucas that said some years ago that sound is 50% of the experience. If we really want to immerse people in virtual experiences, we need to give them realistic spatial sound. And I think this is where I would like to see things going towards. Thank you.
Yeah, I think from like a creative standpoint, and we were talking about this a little bit last night, like I'm really interested. I see spatial audio as a way of creating like new tonalities and new sounds for us to be able to use in our creative practices. So one of the things, you know, one of the things I kind of harp on, I think from a creative standpoint is, you know, thinking about the spatialization and using space as part of your compositional practice. So it's, you're actually adding another dimension to, you know, your musical practice, you know, if you're a musical artist or a composer. And it's being able to think about how that then gives the audience, you know, a different interpretation or a different experience of your work. So like some of my favorite, one of my favorite pieces that I kind of experienced a while back, it was very simple. I was at the Cube at Virginia Tech. And so the Cube, they have a 140 channel speaker array. And it's a little bit weird how it's set up. There's like 64 channels that are kind of at ear level. And this one composer I know, Eric Lyon, he just, in every speaker, he put a sound that was just like one kind of pitch, you know, higher than the next. And so but the thing is, as you walk around the space, you can choose to walk around the space in different ways, right? And so it's like you can, you know, if you walk around the edge, you know, you hear that tone going up. And then if you turn around, you hear it going down. And then if you're, you know, moving around, if you're in the middle, it just sounds like a, you know, beating sort of tone. And there's just all these different ways that you can experience it as an audience member. And I think as creatives, you know, it gives you that next dimension and that next, you know, exploration. Another kind of, you know, thing that I did is I had recorded a piano using, you know, 12 different microphones, you know, set up in a different kind of, you know, different surround sort of patterns. And then using, you know, kind of playing that back, but then I would take 5 of those microphones and I'd spin them in a circle and I would create this kind of wah, 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 you know, sound with the piano. And so it's actually creating a new tone and a new sound that, you know, people are able to experience. And so I think that that's like from a musical and kind of creative perspective, I think there's a lot that we can start thinking about and how do we actually create just, you know, these different experiences for people and being able to kind of connect with them in different ways and express, you know, whatever we're trying to express, you know, in a way that is kind of encapsulating space. And I think that these tools and, you know, technologies are really allowing us to do some pretty impressive and creative things within that.
Yeah, I have a small list of personal hot picks in relation to our XR industry, extended reality sector. I think things will continue to see steady innovation across the spectrum, including audio. I think the global convergence of creative industries will continue. You know, the type of work we do is a perfect example where sometimes it's really hard to describe the genre or even technology you're working because it's just all of the above. Is it a game? If it's location-based interactive experience? Is it immersive film? And what it does, it creates a lot of challenges for how do you address spatial audio, but also loads of creative opportunities. That's what keeps it fresh and exciting for us all the time. I see virtual production and network collaboration, network music performing, seeing a massive uptake, green screen studios, massive production being done with the use of game engines such as Unreal, serious scale collaboration happening remotely, so people don't have to travel, people don't have to be in the same room, and they can enjoy all the latest and the best innovation in space to facilitate those practices and workflows. And I think the key factors will be the use of AI. Absolutely, that will disrupt a lot of markets and professions, but it also will empower a lot of people, a lot of individuals within their workplace. As always, there'll be good and bad and ugly that'll come with that. And big players, companies we already mentioned, your Googles, Metas, and Apples will continue kind of the shape, mass adoption patterns from consumer standpoint, and that will inevitably have a big impact what we do on our side as we're trying to sort of navigate that world and continue to deliver world-class experiences for the audiences around the world. One thing I'm sure about, the spatial audio is here to stay and grow in a big way.
Agreed.
Awesome.
So maybe going back to you, Natalia, looking at the past, present, and future, what are you most excited about the immersive audio industry going forward?
I don't want to sound repetitive, but I have to say freedom again. And this is now a little bit from the perspective of both sound designers and people experiencing immersive audio. So for sound designers to be able to shape sound in the room or shape sound to their liking in a completely new way with a completely new degree of, again, freedom, I think that's something that is huge, really. And for audiences, so you no longer are, you know, just a seated audience listening to or being presented with the experience, if that makes sense, but you have the agency to move around the space, you have an agency to discover things. So I think maybe some summary of that would be a discoverable, layered audio sound, you know, that you can interact with. Something that's targeted to you, something that's customized to you, something that switches on when you do something, you know, just really having that in the real space without headphones, because that's very important, as opposed to a blanket audio, right? So it's no longer we switch the light on and it's light in the room. We now have individual areas of the space, and it looks some like, again, visually, when you compare that, this kind of just light on rather than like a spotlight, rather than having a nice light design, it's exactly the same thing, I think, for me in audio. So I'm very much excited about the fact that things will start sounding nicer. And what Marcos, what you mentioned, the 50%, right? I kind of want to say, you know, places like Sphere are it's no longer just matching sound to go with the visuals. Like, we're really past that. It's people go to places to experience the sound, and I'm 100% sure this will continue. And maybe it will never surpass, but in the world of audio enthusiasts, I'm sure people will be going to places just to actually hear, right? And visuals will be supporting the audio.
So I think, you know, Oliver, you know, mentioned this a little bit. I think, you know, I know there's a lot of panels here about AI and kind of, you know, how AI is going to influence different industries within all industries. But I think, you know, it's going to influence our industry as well. And I think, Marcos, you guys are doing some stuff with AI in your company. And just, I think, you know, I'm interested in kind of how that's going to change, you know, the way that, like, just the possibility of spatialization and creating, you know, a better experience, you know, for people to have it actually sound a lot more spatialized. I think that there's definitely a lot of potential for being able to use that technology to really enhance, you know, the technologies that we already have and make it just sound kind of even more realistic. And I think also, again, it's just, I think I'm excited about the creativity, you know, and the creativity that can kind of come from this and the next generation of, you know, I think we already see all the newer venues like the Sphere, you know, kind of popping up. And I think there's a lot of spaces actually in Europe that are popping up with these immersive, you know, kind of venues and being, and then also just installations. And there's all these new spaces that are kind of being created for people to come in and to be able to create kind of live content, to get people together in different ways. And I mean, I'm all about kind of just like the community engagement and like bringing people together and how do we, you know, create these spaces and environments for that. And I think that there's a lot of potential with, you know, creative audio or spatial audio to really, you know, kind of advance just the creativity of artists and art, you know, that are trying to use these technologies.
We are in 2024. I think we are lucky because we are at a point where we can consume spatial audio. You know, I think we go back a couple of decades ago, we basically need to go to some cinemas. I think probably not all the cinemas had Dolby Surround, so it was hard. But I think right now we are at a place where we can consume spatial audio in a variety of use cases, from going to places like the Sphere to just basically being at home and having like a great spatial audio. And this is great. And also consumers have an awareness of what spatial audio are. Basically, our CEO that is here in the audience, he always tells me that 20 years ago he needed to explain people what spatial audio is. Nowadays people know what spatial audio is, okay? So basically we can consume it. And I think the future is, as Oliver has just said, spatial audio is here to stay. And consumers are either to grab it and to consume it with some kind of wearables, like for example, where we combine it with some kind of a XR headset, or with a wearables, you know? And this is like where technologies like Holoplot or Audioscenic come in to give you a very good experience that you can consume or in an arena or at home, okay? And with touching also a bit like things like AI, for example, TikTok has basically this tool that it can automatically compose audio to your videos. This audio can be made spatial as well, you know? And I think with tools being more advanced and more advanced, we're going to have spatial audio everywhere, yeah.
Thank you. I think I just want to step away from the technology for a moment and look at the whole thing from a different point of view. What does it mean to me personally? It's probably all of the above, everything we talked about so far, and it's the very existence of the immersive audio industry and the current state of play of immersive audio industry as it is now. Yes, we talked about the tech, the formats, the platforms, etc., but it created this whole new community that is really innovative and diverse and vibrant. And, you know, South by Southwest Festival, unfortunately already finished, but the immersive exhibition was absolutely fantastic. The type of experiences I remember from back in the day versus the complexity and sophistication that we reached collectively today is absolutely astonishing. And I'm sure a lot of people in the audience would agree with me. So, yeah, my biggest takeaway, I guess, is this: the establishment of this community. And I just hope that we continue to evolve collectively and stay on this positive trajectory.
All right. Well, I think with that, we want to open it up for Q&A. So I think there's a microphone kind of here in the middle. People want to step up and we have a little bit of time for questions here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Check, check. Okay, so I'm an audio engineer, and so what you're explaining, it sounds amazing. I mean, I've been exposed to spatial audio with Dolby Atmos, which is 7.1.4, but just for example, like you two have two different products. You have the binaural soundbar. You're talking about this whole stage. So from a mixing standpoint, would I, as an audio engineer, need to make separate mixes for all of these different products, all these different types of spatial audio and binaural experiences? Or would mixing in Dolby Atmos, for example, be able to translate in all of those different applications?
It's a very good question. And there is like a thousand ways to skin a cat, I think, you know, here. And I don't really know the tools for designing sound with Holoplot. I will let Natalia explain that, and maybe I can then give you my point very briefly.
Yeah, sure, I guess that. So it can, for example, again, Sphere being a good one, right? In Sphere opened with U2 and simultaneously opened with a film, Postcards from Planet Earth, which is playing, you can still hear it. The film was actually produced in Atmos. So the way we delivered it there in terms of commissioning of the system comes with presets. So three times in a day, the film in Atmos is playing at Sphere. And then with a flip of a button, you basically, U2 comes in and it's suddenly a kind of rock concert, right? So physically, the system doesn't change. You just change it in software. And in terms of the production, you don't need to think about this differently. So I described the different beams that we're using. Every beam is a, for example, Dante or Ravenna channel, and you just do soft patching as you would. So basically, it's nothing. You can come to Sphere with a mono input also, and if you wanted to, yeah, you can. It's moldable, right? So you can reprogram the system to essentially match what you have already and plug yourself into the preset as it's been prepared. So it's not. There are a few things you need to wrap your head around there, but it's really, I made it sound a lot more complex than it actually is in reality. It's easy to work with. Thank you.
And if I can say some concept to grasp is that if you see binaural audio as the final consumption format, it doesn't matter what is the initial input format because you can convert it to binaural. You know, and it can be a game engine, or it can be stereo, or it can be Dolby Atmos, or it can be ambisonic. You are going to get the HRTFs that you prefer the most. You're going to have dynamic HRTFs, and you're going to make it binaural. So the technology we are pushing for the consumer is very, let's say, all-wheel drive. It can go everywhere, because basically you can convert any past format, any present format, and any future format to binaural, really.
I'll just add one thing real quick as far as like kind of from, again, as an artist, like working in these spaces, like the one thing with Dolby that I found constraining is that it is a pretty like specific, you know, this is where the speakers need to be and should be. And I think like, you know, like the Holoplot system, I think is awesome because it can kind of adapt in that sense. But you know, when you do go into some of these different spaces and they have their different speaker arrays. So I come from like the dome space and it's like, they're completely, there's no standards at all, which just is a headache for anybody mixing. And there's still a lot of work to be done kind of in that space and trying to figure out, you know, how do we want to set systems up? And then can we have algorithm, not just like speakers that kind of, you know, can then adapt to different situations, but can we also have algorithms that can kind of adapt to different speaker situations? So.
Hi, I'm from Story Futures at Royal Holloway, University of London in the UK, and we're the new leading institution in the UK National CoStar National Lab. And I'm an audience researcher there. And I'm really excited about all the personalization and creativity that comes from this. Just for a slightly different angle, we know that not everybody experiences sound the same way. So I'm wondering what you can say about accessibility, if these new technologies give new opportunities to people who are hearing impaired or can permit new kinds of accessibility to people?
I love this question. Thanks for asking, really. Absolutely. And that's something we speak quite loudly about. When I talked about the different zones, right, you can have a zone, again, something that you can play with is a different level. So you have control over each of the beams that comes out of the system. So one can be louder, one can be quieter, one can be in a different language. You can have a very small subset of people listening to specifically altered signals. So 100% it supports that. And there are actually many, many different other ways to kind of make it more accessible. I think what's important also is, what I maybe didn't mention, is this kind of signal direct signal to reverberant signal ratio. And that's a, just a technical term, but what it means is that the speech intelligibility within the zone is a lot higher than it is with a traditional speaker system, which makes it a lot easier to obviously hear, to understand, to your brain doesn't need so much power, energy wasted on concentrating on what is being said, because it just hears and understands. So thank you for the question. I really love it. And I think it's going to be probably same for you, Marcos.
It is similar. And also, once we can render spatial audio, there is this phenomenon called binaural masking release. And it's something that we use in our everyday, that when there is a sound there that is very noisy, our brain knows, no, the focus of attention of what I want to hear is there. When we are able to match visuals with what we hear spatially, that helps with speech intelligibility. So that's a plus for accessibility, really. Yeah.
I think there's also like the HRTF functions. So a lot of research is going into because as you said, everyone's different and hears sounds differently. We all have, one of the big things is we all have differently shaped ears and shoulders and heads. So there's a lot of work going into the personalized HRTFs. So that's kind of a big topic, and kind of being able to personalize, an HRTF. That's going to be more for sort of the binaural space and like working in, that area.
Can I just super quickly add one more thing? Because what we're working on as well is actually creating quiet zones, which is something maybe we don't talk about so much, but we're testing, for example, people who work in bars. You know, if you work in a bar for 12 hours straight, it's kind of dangerous actually for your hearing. And to be able to have a dance floor and a bar separately treated in terms of the different audio beam, where the bar staff are just in a beam that still has low frequencies, because we can't control low frequencies so well anyway, but it still gives you the nice environment, but you can have a conversation without shouting. So it's a really nice way to kind of play with customizing essentially to your audience. Thank you for the question.
Great panel. I've been working with audio since I was a teenager, and I had a religious experience at Sphere.
Wait.
A religious audio experience. My watch was measuring 108 dB, zero distortion, clear as a bell. It was amazing. And so it's a technical question. It might be a little bit too deep for now. I was guessing that the multipoint array is using phase cancellation controlled by DSP to do those acoustic controls. Is that the right track?
Yeah, there is a lot of compensations. So basically, when you think of the proscenium array in Sphere, so thanks, and I'm super happy you had a nice experience there, first of all. If you think of the number of point sources in there, we're talking thousands, right? Each is controlled individually. It's all quite software heavy, right? There is a very, very sophisticated algorithm that tells the system essentially what to do with each of these drivers in order that sound comes out a special way. And there are many compensation algorithms, including phase cancellations, including obviously compensation for the LED screen being in, et cetera, et cetera. So there is, it's quite a smart system in that sense. Yep. Thank you.
Hi. So I was talking to a bunch of producers and mix engineers about spatial audio, and it seems like one of the reasons, or one of the main reasons they mix in spatial is not necessarily because they like it, but because a bunch of streaming services and labels they have to send the mix to require a 3D mix. So my question is, what would you say to a music industry professional who is on the fence about spatial music? And then secondly, do you think that immersive audio in music is here to stay, or is its true home in some other form of entertainment medium?
Okay, I think I was going off about this last night to Marcus. We were having a deep discussion. So I think, again, one of the right now, I think Dolby Atmos is kind of like the big thing in the music space. I work with a lot of artists that are, they go and they do these Dolby Atmos mixes, and then they do the binaural render, and they're like, this sounds horrible. In a way, I feel like it is a bit of a disservice to kind of, the space, because there are a lot of other, ways of doing these mixes, a lot of other binaural stuff. And I really always kind of harp on, I think that like you have to start from the beginning. I think stereo mixes are amazing. It's like the engineers that have, there's some incredible and amazing engineers that, have done these mixes. But when you're mixing for stereo, it's all about kind of scooping out, different frequency ranges, and you're fighting with trying to actually be able to fit all of that content within, this stereo image. And the reason that you mix the way you do for stereo is because of that reason. It's actually a lot easier to mix for like surround or for a spatial environment because you don't have as much of this like these competing frequencies. And they actually have their own space and their own place. And so I know a lot of, like, right now it's a lot of mix engineers are being given these mastered stems of, like, you know, songs that have already been previously released and mixed for stereo and then remixing them for, you know, these other formats. And then, you know, and then, again, it's just kind of, but, you know, like the Dolby Atmos, you know, binaural renderer, what it does is, it puts a tone. It creates a different sound of the music, and it's like when you're, you know, mixing something that's so based on tone, and then you're just kind of slapping this on to kind of like create a, you know, a virtual image, you are ruining a lot of that tone. And so I think like you do have to think about it from the beginning of the process. It's like you should be recording for immersive, mixing, you know, composing for immersive, mixing for immersive, and releasing for immersive. And that's you know, maybe I'm a purist in that way, but that's kind of my I've got some passion behind that.
I think that this is completely right. And one of the things I would say, and Natalia has said it before, like is like headphones is not the way to really consume spatial audio. Okay, because you think about it, we didn't evolve as humans hearing sounds so close to our ears. But if we can really give like a good reproduction method that will give us a good experience, I think we will like it. But the industry needs to do more work for it.
I can see that we have a few more questions in the queue, but we're being told by the crew that it's time to wrap up. On that note, I just would like to thank South by Southwest for this opportunity, providing us with this platform. And I'd like to thank our guests,
thank you,
Marcos, Natalia, and my co-host, Monica. And I'd like to thank you for joining us today. And enjoy the rest of the festival.
If you enjoy the podcast and would like to show your support, please consider becoming a Patreon. Not only are you supporting us, but you will also get special access to bonus content and much more. Find out more on our official Patreon page, www.patreon.com/immersive audio podcast. You've been listening to the Immersive Audio Podcast, hosted by Oliver Cadell and Monica Bowles. This episode was produced by Oliver Cadell and Emma Reese and included music by Rhythm Scott. Got an idea for an episode or want to comment on something we've discussed recently? Drop us an email at podcast@1618digital.com or find us on Twitter at iAudioPodcast. If you've enjoyed our show, head to our page on iTunes and leave us a review and rating. It really helps us out. Visit immersiveaudiopodcast.com to access show notes and other episodes and subscribe on your favorite podcast app. Thanks for listening.
Looking for more audio-related podcasts to listen to? We're part of the Audio Podcast Alliance, featuring a hand-picked selection of the very best podcasts about sound. Be sure to hear the latest episodes from our friends in the community at audiopodcast.org.